Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about some updates from the field. Our spotlight will be looking at peak sticks. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about the history of the peak stick. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. A lot going on right now in this last couple week stretch here. Had the big draft down the road, the big draft here,
the bigger draft here,
and the Kentucky Derby is this weekend. So, be a lot of sports in one short period of time here.
May is always a lot of fun with just baseball.
Basketball everything playoffs.
Basketball playoffs.
We're not going to talk about basketball playoffs, though.
we'll skip that part. You guys went to the draft, right?
Yeah, yep. We did.
Saturday?
We had to go because we had our draft, and then you had to go.
Oh, right.
Draft. It was, yep.
Yeah, we went Friday night. It was pretty...
Friday night. Rain was done?
After the
just,
rain, yeah.
Just as the rain was kind of wrapping up, it was a little damp, but not bad. Yeah, it was... pretty well attended, I thought, as far as, I mean, overall, the whole weekend, they said 600,000, give or take, which, obviously, some of that's duplicates, wasn't a different...
What I thought was we never scanned our QR code anywhere.
A lot of people are saying that.
Yeah, we never had to...
So I don't know how they knew the count, unless somebody's literally...
I'm sure they...
Big Brother knows...
AI was counting us.
I mean, we had to walk through security, and so that could have been something with that. But, yeah, they didn't really scan or...
I mean, they were pushing download the app,
app. Yeah, they're probably tracking how many people on the app were in too.
Did you take... They'd, you could take pictures of different QR codes to get badges and stuff.
Sure. I didn't end up doing any of that,
but, yeah. Two of those, I don't know. But the... So I'm sure, like you say, they... could track you that way.
Yeah. So I'm sure, the stage crowd, they probably had enough cameras they could get a pretty good estimate of how many people were in that area.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that's, everyone everywhere around the draft campus, but...
It was out of watching it on TV, and some of those views they have of the overhead, they had, a big arm to look down, and then they had... some drones, and they had one on
a sky cam,
a sky cam thing.
Oh, on cables.
Yeah, and when you look it down at those views, it looked like less people than when you were there. When you were there, it definitely felt
200,000,
more. And as you got back from the stage, it thinned out, but that was just so you could kind of see because there was a little bit of an angle, but not really. You know, you're not on a.
You
a
could actually side see of. The stage better from. Right next to Lambeau, right as you walked in, because the parking lot is
higher.
Is graded toward the stage. So the closer you got to the stage, the harder it was actually.
It was just
the
stage. Flat.
Sure.
So yeah, that stage was just massive. You couldn't really.
Did you see the picks? Were the Packers picks?
We were there for.
Yeah.
I was in Lambeau for one of the Packers picks. Matt went down.
My son and I were in the crowd. Because then as soon as the Packers picked, a ton of Packers fans left, and then we got really close.
Oh, sure.
And then we stayed there, and it was kind of interesting. You don't think about some of these things, when you're watching on TV, but when you're there, at one point there were, I think, 4 picks were completed before they even announced any of them because of commercials and all that kind of stuff.
It was. It felt the cadence and the rhythm at it felt weird.
Way different.
It was just a pick. And then a band for a while, or
they wouldn't announce,
maybe somebody would talk a little bit, but it was mainly...
They wouldn't announce commercial breaks, but they'd all of a sudden you'd be like, it was kind of like being in the grocery store. There's a trade for... And whoever traded their pick, all of a sudden they'd make an announcement. And it was just like that. It was very short. There was a trade.
Was it pick, 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 commercial, band, and then pick, 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 that kind of?
No, they were still picking while the commercials were going.
Just they wouldn't come out and
they would just stack them up.
Oh, they wouldn't tell you.
Yeah.
So you didn't know.
You would know the pick was done because on the big screen it would say the pick is in.
Yep.
But then whenever the cameras must have came back on, they'd put them on the clock again, whoever the next team was, even though they had already made their pick.
Sure. Did you hear the chime?
No, the chime is just chime on, is just TV.
That's on TV. Yep.
It was more boring than you thought there. Like, there was just, it was just, if you like listening to bands, it was cool. And then hearing sports picks in the middle, it was neat. But you'd kind of talk to people that you're there with. Or
the best part, while we were in the crowd the second time, like, that was when me and I said you guys were wandering around. It was, we were there for, like, I think 4 Bears picks. And every time it was boo, followed by the Bears still suck chant, to the point where on the 3rd or 4th time, one of the ladies on stage, I can't remember who it was, but was like emceeing, was like, "Nope, get it out of your system. Let's go. Let's hear the right. Bears still suck one more time
before she.
Yep. And then they had some pro wrestler came out. I forget what his name is for the Bears pick. Yeah, he was trying to talk him up, and you couldn't even hear him talk over the booze.
I'm so glad the Packer fans just, like,
committed.
We've officially committed, like, between Charlie Behrens and everybody is committed to this Bears still suck.
It does look like all we care about is the Bears sucking. That was very...
And all they care about is beating us. They don't care about Super Bowl. They care about...
And that was the one guy. It wasn't the pro wrestler guy, but it was another guy who was like... Said something about the King of the North because they beat us at home twice this year. And there was one guy, like, to my right in the crowd who was very, very adamant that he was going to be the loudest
Bear fan?
Screamer of... No.
Bear fan?
Anti-Bear fan. Like, loudest booer, the loudest
Bear still suck guy.
The loudest, like, hang the banner because, you know, they always win the offseason. Like... Everything you could say about the Bears, he was going to say, and very loudly. And it was funny. It didn't get to the point, we weren't there long enough for it to be annoying, but I'm sure, like, for 3 days of that, it would be probably annoying.
What was the percentage of the crowd, like?
95% like, Packers.
It was that much.
I was going to say 90, for sure, 9 out of 10, I agree with Matt. It was...
When the pick was done and they all, like, a bunch of Packer fans trucked out, that's when I first started really seeing other, like, teams represented, like, when I got closer. So a lot of the out-of-town people seemed to be closer to the gate, like, that must have came there and just like, well, I'm here, I'm going to sit here, like, all day type thing.
Well, and, like, on TV, like, okay, so Tennessee's on the clock, and they keep showing, like, the 5 Tennessee
They got their
fans
super
there.
Fans right. up front. Right.
That's probably all the Tennessee.
Right.
It's
I
just
didn't
those
see any
five
of Tennessee
No. Yeah. I saw Steelers. I saw Bears, Vikings. Didn't really see much Lions.
Some, but not as much as I thought.
There's enough Bear fans, though.
Kansas City. There were a handful of guys that I saw with, like, Kansas City sweatshirts.
There must have been a Seattle super fan there, because TV, like, you'd see, sure. like you said, the super fans.
Yeah, they bring in from all.
You could pay a stupid amount of money to go sit in some couches up in front of the stage.
Yep.
As every team was represented there, but I did talk to one of my farmers. So when the last guy that was there, was it Sorrel?
Baron
Sorrel.
Yep.
He actually, so they showed on TV him like walking out in the crowd. He walked into Lambo and like walked around.
He did a Lambo leap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a cool story.
So that was kind of like,
so Matt cool. So it was the third round.
Saturday morning. Basically.
No, it was the fourth round.
Fifth round.
I'm thinking
it was late.
It was
his agent gave him bad advice.
Well, he just said he wanted to go see. Like he wanted to have the experience. It wasn't he did not think he was being picked the first day at all.
Right.
It wasn't like that. He just wanted to be there and then to get picked by the Packers there and be able to do that. Like how cool is that?
Yeah. Like, and that's right.
It was fourth round, 124th pick.
And that Goodell brought him out too and was like, "Hey, he's still here. Come out and
Right, how...
Do your bro hug.
And to have that experience, how cool is that? Like that.
I think people were equally surprised that Goodell hung around that long, too.
Sure.
Like, what is the commissioner still doing?
So, I was at a farm yesterday, and he said he knows the officer that was Goodell's personal runaround.
Oh, sure.
And he stayed till the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They came in to Sheboygan, apparently, and had some powwow with... He had to go down to Sheboygan to get him. That's where they flew in.
I'm sure Kohler and
all that other stuff. I don't know if it was like NFL meetings or what, but and then he stayed till the end.
I would have thought he'd be out of there on the last day, like, what am I going to hang around for? I know he was part of the bike parade. That was Saturday morning because they showed. I had to kind of laugh because Mark Murphy had a helmet on, and he was, like, the only one with a helmet.
Oh, really?
Like, Goodell didn't have one on. Like, all these
surprised people. With the optics of that they didn't. You're right.
They did
right?
The training That's camp bike?
Yeah, they did a bike parade. So, basically, anybody could come, I think, and ride your bike, and they went, I don't know the whole route. I just saw some pictures of it. I didn't see video. But, yeah, they rode around Lambeau or whatever on bikes then. So kids could join in. There were adults. Players, I don't know if any of the draftees did it, but it'd be the best time to do it. Most players probably have it in their contract that they they can't do that kind of thing. But
it was neat to see that there was more people there. Like, right, there was like 200,000 every day, basically, like double the people right there than in the whole city of Green Bay. Like,
right.
That's crazy.
Right.
Yeah, they showed some statistics. Because Detroit had a bigger crowd. They had like 750,000 or something like that. But when you look at the like ratio of population to crowd in that area, Green Bay's was the highest percentage, like, because it was basically every day double the yeah. population compared to Detroit. I think it was only like a 19% increase compared to their population. So, yeah.
It'd be fun to talk to... Friend of the show, we've had him on, Jeff Smutty, on wastewater treatment in Green Bay, and what the draft, like, I mean, because I had porta-potties, but the
bathrooms
stadiums,
and stadium
they
were
all open,
yeah.
and the porta-potties were full or busy usually.
He's the one that talks about the holding tank.
Yeah,
Lambeau, right.
So just like, if they saw like a three-day influx, plus we got enough rain, so that changes stuff for them too. That, yeah, I wonder what kind of week they had.
It was neat to see, too, that the viewership on TV was the second highest ever
okay.
to the COVID one.
Oh,
which
right.
Which everybody watched because we had nothing else
right,
to watch.
Right.
Well, because it was that. Well, we were there. No.
Yeah, they marched out.
Jonathan Taylor.
Jonathan Taylor got to give the pick. And then what
he
was neat.
Got his own.
His
draft moment.
They gave him like a draft moment because he didn't. Get to walk out.
Oh, because he was a COVIDer.
He was
right.
COVID
so they kind of pulled him to the side and then did a big. It was That's neat, cool. you know, like yeah. hey, you're drafted.
Did they
by
do
the...
it just for him?
Right, just for him.
That we saw anyway.
Right, they maybe did it. For
there
was
any other
like a Badger thing. You think?
Cause well, because he's a lot of Badgers announced picks.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then because he
Melvin
was
Gordon
during COVID, they just said you never got your experience. So did Goodell come hug him or not? I'm pretty sure he did.
I remember if Goodell did. I know him of the other people on the stage.
Yeah, and they kind of, you know, with the whatever pick, the Indianapolis Colts selection.
Sure, there was some cheering because
it was
Badger ties.
It was a ton of cheering, yeah. So it was cool.
Yeah, they had a lot of Badgers. Well, because I think probably all but one or two picks while we were there initially in the crowd were
Wisconsin
former
ties.
Wisconsin players, yeah. Then later got into... Other people, like I said, that pro wrestler, and there was one, I don't remember whose pick that was, but it was like a farm-to-table thing that was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was interesting. I initially had no plans to go there, and then my son, like, begged me. He's like, I really want to go. And you guys were going, so we ended up going, and yeah.
Adam found his parking. It was good.
That's good.
Yeah, we didn't have to pay $200 to park somewhere.
It felt like... It
sounded like other people didn't either. They bypassed
no, and
it.
I
no, a lot of people dropped it by the second or third day.
Yeah. Prices went down even... It wasn't as full. You couldn't drive down close. Right. It was hard to just drive there, so I think a lot of people just parked and just started walking. But it felt like just a huge... Like, take every festival in Wisconsin and put it with the Packers, and that's what it felt like.
Sure.
You know, like you had... All the festival food stuff kind of thing, you know, like, and then the stadium food. And
Todd and I were there together, but it was surprising looking on Facebook afterwards, like how many people that I know that were there
right.
the same time I was there.
Never
you
seen any of I saw one guy that I knew from a distance. That was it. Out of all those,
wow.
like, it was just crazy.
You're right. Like, they're like just now a week out from it, just in talking to people. Oh, I was there. And it's like, and you didn't see anybody.
No, even if you got disconnected, too, it was very hard to find
And even looking back at pictures, like comparing to other people's pictures, like, oh, we weren't that far apart either in the crowd. Like,
no.
It was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of the view I had, so you couldn't have been too far from me. And yeah, so it was kind of interesting. And yeah, some people went all 3 days. Some people went one day.
What's your over-under for when it's coming back? Like 10 years? Like,
I have a feeling they're going to cycle through all the...
You think they'll go to... Yeah, we'll be that long. I got a feeling...
It seems like they're going to focus on the non-Super Bowl cities. Which there's 32, and we figure there's probably, what, six? Half a dozen that will actually host a Super Bowl.
Well, that will actually... No, it's probably...
Well, no, here, you're right. 10
or 15 that would actually host it, but...
Yeah.
Like you say, they never let us, for sure, so...
Even if we had hotels, the weather alone...
Right. Because we're not an indoor stadium either. Right. You know,
like
you're
Minnesota, they're not going back.
You don't think they're going back?
For a Super Bowl?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know that they'll go back.
There was a rumor that... Because next year it's in Pittsburgh, the draft was going to be in Minneapolis then, 27.
Okay.
But I don't know how firm that is, or if they're, it seems like they're vying for it. So it does seem like there's a stretch of like in the Midwest, because it was in Detroit, now it was Green Bay, next Pittsburgh. Like we're all pretty much in a line up here. So yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see.
I did hear though that the businesses like one tier out from the whole district kind of suffered a lot. Like,
well, even certain areas, I saw stuff from businesses that had like booths there, but didn't get for the foot traffic they thought they were going to get. So
it would have been hard if you weren't, depending where you are, to get to all those places. Yeah, you might have, like,
or you
say,
just
a lot
didn't
of the,
know they were there,
right? Right, because they had a fence around the whole area we were in. Like, once you went through security, you're behind a fence, and it wasn't like there was a ton of exits everywhere. Like, we went out the same way we came in, but I'm sure there had to be ways to get out other places. But we never, I never really noticed them in walking around. But yeah, I don't think it'll be, you know, somebody said once in a lifetime. I don't think it'll be that. There's, especially if the NFL's happy, it'll maybe 10 years or something.
I heard once in a decade.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Like, cool. I'm thinking 30 or 40 years, but every 10, that would be awesome.
Well, there's only 32 teams.
Right.
So even if they let every team host it, the most it would be is 31 years before it'd be back. And I don't think any of the Super Bowl cities, they would do it, because then you could, especially if they had the chance to double up in a year, that'd be crazy, do the draft and the Super Bowl.
I'm hopeful this shows other things. Like, I heard FIFA World Cup going to come here, and they were going to decide on, like, what happened with the draft, if we could handle something like that. So I'm hoping that, because it went so well and didn't sound like there was major issues, that other things will be like, oh, well, we can come here now because they can handle it.
No, surprisingly, like, there were, from what I've seen anyway, and maybe I missed some of it, but there were less arrests in 3 days of the draft than one Packer game.
That was wild to me. That it was basically one arrest.
Right, one
guy. It sounded like they kicked a lot of people out. But, yeah, it'd be cool. Like, you wonder who that one guy is and what he did. But it did feel – obviously, people were drinking, and there was a lot of beer stands, which is fun. But it was, like, this oddly
– more family.
Well, in Wisconsin, we're used to – like, that was just a normal Friday night in Wisconsin. Sure. Really, honestly. Yeah. And it was not anything – yeah, it was just like a normal.
The only thing missing was the fish fry. Like,
right.
If somebody would have been walking around with things of fish, that all the Wisconsin people probably would have bought that. But I don't know. Did you go over to there was a line of like local restaurants kind of by a beer tent on the one side of Lambeau. So I noticed it as we were walking out. But it, like, the Mark had
a
booth.
Picture of that, yeah.
I can't remember what all different restaurants there were, but. So that was kind of neat that you could get, like, because I know they did a Taste of Lambeau Krabby Supper Club out here in Seymour. They went out and did.
Yeah, cool.
Because they had a bunch of pictures with, like, Goodell and people, so. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the next time they'll figure out how to get better foot traffic at other places, but. I know the bars made out. They had stages. I can't imagine.
I'm sure Stadium View.
Stadium View.
Yeah, all them close bars.
And Doozy and all of that.
Yeah.
didn't do well. So, all right, you guys ready to get into it?
Well, we got to talk about the big draft. How did you guys feel after the second most important draft? You feel more confident or like that draft's always a lot of fun. Every year we do it because it just the way corn varieties line up and what you're trying to do and draft strategies. So
once it's in the ground and emerged, that's
then we'll see.
Then I can talk about my comfort level. Till then,
all right. I like that.
I'll wait till harvest. I was feeling pretty good last year, and then it didn't turn out.
And Doug's not here to comment, but he's got a pretty rocking team. So he did really well. I felt, and he was kind of before me, and so I had.
He's the Bears. He won the draft.
He definitely is the Bears. Because every year I do feel like I say that. Like he.
Should we get him a banner?
We should, actually.
Off-season champion. All right. So what do we got, Todd? What's going on?
So today we're going to talk about, you know, what's going on in the field. Unfortunately, in our area, there is not a lot going on quite yet. I mean, there's a few things, but overall it's been wet and cool and just kind of what feels like a late spring. I know when that calendar turns to May, that just automatically starts to feel a little later, so forecast is looking good, which is always a fun part good when you got that excitement of it's starting to turn. But I want to talk about the first thing today is about early plant soybean herbicide programs. So mainly if you plant it, when we say early plant, I'll call that sort of April. I mean, I think that last week in April, maybe this will be different, but if you're planting the insurance date in our area, which is April 21st, so if you're planting on that day, kind of to the 25th or end of April, what should be looking at for herbicide program? What are some options? And the main reason I want to talk about this is it tends to be cold, tends to be wet for us yet. And is that pre that we're so used to preaching on, do we have to do it? Should we skip it? What could we do? And I think there's a couple things to think about there. If you got to burn some weeds down, you may still want to do it, but if it's too cold to be doing burn downs, which this year it wasn't, it was okay, but it wasn't quite the time to be doing burn downs either.
And the nights have been so chilly.
Right.
And if you got a lot of residue, maybe you don't want to be putting that residual herbicide.
Correct.
With the burn down.
Right there. So I think there's a lot of options here. One couple things I just want farmers to consider is two reasons to maybe skip that and wait till early May and apply a different herbicide. The first one is some of those pre-emerges, when it is cold, if you read labels, if it's cool and wet, they can, you know, cause chlorosis or stunting to some of your bean emergence. So if weather conditions are right, you'll be fine. But like I said, make sure you read the label on what you're spraying. Is some of those will say on those kind of cold, wet times where that bean's trying to eat through that and it's got to go through that herbicide, it could slow it down.
Yeah. Well, and another thing to think about too is, like you said, if you're planting April 21st, what are you trying to control? What weeds are you really worried about? And are they going to emerge in a way that will be uncontrollable in the next month, basically?
Right.
Well, in general, you're doing that probably because last winter you planned and purchased a herbicide that needed to be applied before the beans came out of the ground.
Right. Correct. Potentially, yes. So if you have it, I don't necessarily think you're completely wasting your money, anything like that, if that was your plan. But as we push more into early beans, that could be something to consider of maybe I want to skip that spray and go to something different. The second thing to think about is that the herbicide, basically, you know, the half-life, every week it's out there, it's going to degrade and get less control. So the also thing to think about is, if we're putting it out that early, how much control am I really getting? Is it going to last me to my next pass of, say, Liberty Enlist or whatever your second pass is? Is if I go that early, am I going to need to do even like three passes?
Right.
Which wouldn't be ideal, but you may need to. So I don't want to say they don't work as well in cold cells because they're going to work just fine. It's just that herbicide being out there in that weather is going to degrade over time. So what are the other options, I guess, then, too, to talk about? There's other sort of early post herbicides that basically when I'd call quote unquote like normal planting, so say like May 15th when we're normally planting, you could spray these when the beans are up. So Zidua SC or some of the other Zidua products that are pre-mixed like Perpetuo, there's some other Anthem Flex that would work as well sort of at that timing that are the Zidua ones. And then we have some dual pre-mixes. So we could just use dual with, say, Roundup or something like that, or a product called Prefix, which is dual and fomosafin.
Yep.
So there is some products out there, too, that we can go early post. Some of them, like having fomosafin in there, you are going to burn your beans as well. So, and dual can spot them up. Zidua can do a little damage, too. So it's not necessarily that they're perfect either. And they will not kill any emerged weeds. So something to really think about if you do have a Roundup-resistant weed problem, you probably don't want to skip your pre. You probably
Benefit of the prefix, though, is the fomosafin is going to give you some activity.
Right. It'll knock them back, especially when they're little like that. It should kill them or knock them back. So you're right, Bill, on that. That should work okay. And would you agree with this statement, is most Roundup-resistant weeds are late emergers?
Well, we know water hemp needs certain, like that one in particular, we know needs enough GDUs to get going. We talked GDUs last week. And usually that's end of May, early June before you really get enough GDUs to get that emerging. Right. So
that was my other point in all this, is maybe this timing is actually timed ahead of water hemp emergence, giant ragweed emergence, weeds that aren't controlled well by Roundup.
Right.
So you could throw Roundup in the tank or potentially Liberty or Enlist, depending on what weeds are emerged. But this one could be a Roundup with another basically group 15 at this point. So it price-wise, some of these you're getting much less chem for the price at that stage. That's why we prefer pre. But like I said, I'm talking specifically to early plant soybeans.
The other thing with the early plant is, you know, it's still chilly, and it's been chilly, so the beans aren't going to fly out of the ground in 3 days.
Right.
So you can cheat a little bit, and if you have to do the pre, or if that's what you're doing, you don't have to be Johnny on the spot, because you know those beans aren't going to be up if you wait a week.
If you wait a little bit, yep.
I've got some planted April 17th. I looked at yesterday, and they're still not out of the ground.
Right.
They're still viable.
Would you be worried about spraying them, though, at this point, right, or not?
At this point,
right?
I probably would.
Yeah.
But they were sprayed a week after planting.
Yeah.
So they've been
on.
Wait longer
been on
a
than
week.
The normal 3 days, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, they're not going to jump out of the ground.
Right.
Especially the weather we've been having lately.
Correct. No, they will take their time. So it is it's sort of a different program in general that you're maybe used to.
But the good news, what you're talking about, Todd, is the beans aren't going to emerge fast, so most likely most of the weeds aren't either. So pushing your spray out another 2 weeks into the growing season should help you for future you. And,
right.
You know, like 2 weeks later than normal, you should still have decently
passing
control.
The buck on to future you. It's right. Future you's problem.
The other herb with future you is going to be spraying all your other beans and corn potentially too.
Right.
So, again, thinking about where it fits in your program and how to spray them, I think would be a really, really, really good plan on that, so that you can make sure that you have a plan and then execute it. But I do feel like as we plant in April, it's different than our May and hopefully May planting, not June. All right, moving on into the next thing that's going on is in a recent Hordes Dairymen article, a friend of the show, Dr. John Gazer, highlighted the importance of recording planting date and variety. So I think this is something, especially in corn silage, I think it's important on corn grain as well. But as we're getting out in the fields right now, I don't care how you record it, just please record it. Please be accurate. Please record it. Knowing the very specific variety, I even got farmers that'll take, you know, pictures of seed tags, so you got lot numbers and things like that. It's very easy on your cell phone now to do that, actually, either keep all your seed tags or take pictures of them.
Well, and depending on how many acres you're running, in a good year, you're probably talking 2-3 days. But in a lot of years, it's a couple days here, a couple days there. Like it might be simple or it might be complicated depending on the weather we get in any given year. And the more acres you're running, the more planting dates you're going to have, just because you're limited by the technology you have.
The neat part with OpCenter is it pretty much does it for you.
Right.
Correct. Kind of. I mean, you still got to be in the cab punching stuff in and watching. But, yeah, I don't care whether it's a notepad, whether it's OpCenter, you know, whether, like I said, you kind of peel off seed tags and write fields on them. I have a system ready to go here for spring and make sure you're marking that down. The other part is if you're buying any corn silage from a neighbor, from a, you know, or, and I mean, not as much grain, we don't do that as much, but say corn silage, but make sure you have...
Maybe high moisture you'd want to...
Right, but getting their records is very important, making sure that they know. I've had that where farms will buy, and it'll just say, like, 98-day planted around May 15th.
And then you show up to chop it, and it's brown.
Right. So having that as part of your contract when you're purchasing corn silage could be extremely valuable to make sure, like, I got to know the planting date, I got to know the variety. And that'll just help, again, future you when we go for harvest to know what fields are going to be ready, what to expect. And helps a lot of things. It helps with other timings. It helps, you know, with herbicide and fungicide timings.
And maybe you know the planting date because you saw them planting the same time you were, but variety is the real kicker there, because if you're buying silage and theirs is a 98-day and yours is a 108-day, that's a pretty wide margin.
Or you just forget to write it down when you see them planting.
Right.
I like what John said in the article. It says, this recommendation likely seems silly or mundane, but it is a must. And I do feel that way. Like, summer growers are going to be like, well, I
know what I planted.
I know what I plant, or I have my system. I take that every year, which is good. Keep doing whatever you're doing. So, and I think one thing to highlight is the softwares now and how much better that's gotten. So, yeah, having, say, a JD Ops where you're punching in your John Deere system right as you're going, the more detailed you can be on that of where you switch varieties and everything, and especially if split planters, if you're doing any of that, like if those don't get in correctly, then, and that's more specific to probably grain guys that on your yield monitor side, if those don't come in correctly, all your yield data to variety really gets useless. So I had one last year. I was pretty excited, and it didn't go in right. So then when we went to get the yield data out by variety, it was all jumbled. Like it didn't make any sense. So that'd be a spot to please make sure you're being as detailed as you can on those and typing the varieties in.
And selfishly, as an agronomist, it helps a lot. It
helps a ton.
Oh, yeah.
Like for just scouting all summer long to know when, what order they were planted, which variety, just so selfishly as an agronomist, it's awesome to have planting dates and varieties accurately denoted. And I'm sure your insurance adjuster will like that too.
Yeah. Month and day are important. If you get the year off, at least we can figure that out.
We'll figure that out.
So that's usually what happens with the monitor. So you get back in the yield data and you're like, this wasn't corn last year.
It didn't change the year.
All right. Well, there you go. There's some things to think about as we move forward this season. Think about the timing of your herbicide applications when it comes to soybeans and when that pre is going to do the most good for you. And if you haven't already committed to a pre, think about early post as an option for early beans. And note your planting dates. Especially corn silage, but corn grain, soybeans, anything, it's always good to keep note of those types of things. So now we'll move into our spotlight for today. It's getting to be that time of year when not only are we thinking about planting, but alfalfa harvest. So peak sticks, or the prediction equations for alfalfa quality, in case you didn't know what PEAK stood for, it's PEAQ, are available. They're ready to order from the Midwest Association, and it's a proven low-cost method for instantly estimating your relative feed value of standing alfalfa. First harvest is typically the highest yielding, yet most difficult crop to put in a timely manner, so that the peak stick can provide you with a simple, effective tool to schedule your harvest and achieve feed value target levels. So I know we've, even if you don't have a peak stick, but you have some sort of measuring device and you know the difference between vegetative bud and blooming alfalfa, you could figure it out. Quick Google search can get you those values in how they compare to the heights of your plants. So you guys carry a peak stick with you this time of year?
I actually don't have one. I use the tape measure method.
Yep.
I'm similar to Bill, where I used to have them, and then they just got more annoying. Maybe it's right, like a tape measure is much easier to keep in the truck. So,
yeah, no, I agree. It's
gone. But I do like the stick. I mean, it is nice to like you say, it's a little easier that you don't got to refer to a chart or
convert
anything.
What's your over under on alfalfa growth this coming week?
I think it's just going to scream.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm already getting that question, like, when's alfalfa going to be ready? And I'm actually thinking, you know, guys took so much poor quality alfalfa last year, so I think they're going to be itching to go earlier.
Sure.
On that first cut and maybe subsequent cuts. And so I think you're going to see people going May 20th to the 25th in there, potentially.
Pre-Memorial Day.
Yeah, we'll see how everything actually shakes, but. Yeah,
the weather is going to be the biggest determining factor on that one, as it is every year.
We have plenty of moisture now. The heat is coming, so it should just, like you said, Todd, just should hear it grow.
Even this last week, it
grew a
quite
lot.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're interested, you can go to midwestforage.org/peak to check out the peak stick availability. Now we'll go into our Ag History Minute. So, as I said, peak stick is the predictive equations for alfalfa quality, and it was developed by the University of Wisconsin by R.W. Hintz and K.A. Albrecht. It's a tool used to estimate the relative feed value of alfalfa in a field by measuring stem height and maturity. Midwest Forage Association also uses and distributes the peak stick. Peak sticks use the longest stem and most mature stem to estimate the NDF, or neutral detergent fiber, of the alfalfa in a standing crop and help producers determine the optimum time to begin harvesting first cut alfalfa. Many consider NDF to be the primary quality variable to target for high producing dairy cows. And if you don't want to have your own peak stick, but you live in our area, you know, Outagamie and Waupaca counties do it. Check with your local counties, forage council or ag agents. Some of them do peak scissor clips where they'll have peak stick measurements and they'll do a scissor clips and either have it sent into a lab or have someone take forage samples so that you can kind of see those values throughout the season. Usually starts 2 to 3 weeks before people start harvesting, and it'll go until the last person in those counties are participating harvest. So you can get 3 to 4 weeks of kind of a, it may not be exactly what your alfalfa is doing, but at least you can have an idea of where alfalfa in your region is at. So,
Todd, did you have Dr. Albrecht?
Oh, yeah. That's the main reason in here, Bill.
Ah,
see if you had Dr. Ken Albrecht.
He,
the forage guru.
The whole world would be planting Kira clover as a cover crop, if it was up.
He loves Kira clover.
Loves Kira clover.
Loves Kira clover.
Yeah, it was the greatest thing, except you can't get it established.
And then when you do get it established, it's really hard to kill.
Yeah.
As I have a grazer that I work with that is finding out, that wants to do something different with that particular paddock, but has tried everything
to kill it.
Yeah.
Forage systems, was that the course he taught?
Yeah, forage. Yeah, it was like
300 something. Yeah.
He had one of the best mustaches.
He reminded me of Captain Kangaroo to some degree.
Nice.
But yeah, he did have a quality. Yep. Matt's getting a picture there.
I didn't know that this was R.W. Hintz.
No, I didn't.
That name, and I even Googled, I didn't recognize him, so I don't know what.
Apparently he was at Iowa State, too.
So, yeah, if he, maybe. even the research, like, paper on it, I couldn't find, so that'd be interesting to try to find how they.
Maybe he was a grad student at the time, Matt.
Probably. What amazes me is how much more accurate it can be than a lab result or similar accuracy. Like, I don't know how. I mean, I know how, but it's by height and it measures by height.
Yeah.
And is calibrated, but it seems to be at times better than the lab result, which shocks me because the lab at certain stages there tends to overpredict quality a little bit, especially when it's like at 250 plus. It's tricky, but all right. Thank you, Matt, and thank you, our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's very easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts or on an Android phone. Download an app like Podcast Addict and search Tilth Talk Radio. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcasts. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into our Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week. No Mo May is no mo.
No mo.
But it is now Slow Mo Summer. So, Appleton, Wisconsin, being one of the pioneers of No Mo May.
They were the epicenter, weren't they?
They were, is changing their tune a little bit on how effective No Mow May was on helping pollinators. So the city that pioneered a movement to protect our pollinator population is adapting its plans. Appleton is no longer offering No Mow May, but is encouraging residents to participate in Slow Mow May. The effort is to ensure bees and other pollinators have nectar and pollen into the fall, instead of 1 month of access to early blossoms as they emerge from hibernation. So the city of Appleton, which is a BUSA city partner, encourages residents to raise their lawnmower to 4 inches and mow when their lawn reaches 6 inches. It also encourages mowing in the late afternoon when pollinators are less active. Unlike No Mow May, you do not need to register your address with the city because apparently they had to. It was a thing, so you wouldn't get a naughty note about not mowing your lawn.
You were getting fined for
so you had to be registered, and you do not have to do that. Just leave your grass a little taller. The city's municipal code for tall grass and weeds will still be in effect, and violators may be charged an assessment fee. The limit is 8 inches in height on developed lots and 12 inches on undeveloped properties. So studies have shown steep declines of bees in the U.S. That's why they're going after more access for pollinators. And so they feel that the change from No Mow May to Slow Mow Summer will help pollinators throughout the season as opposed to a one-and-done early season type of thing.
So. There's going to be a lot of extra clippings if you give it till 6 inches.
You're still like cutting 2 inches.
Remember what was the rule of thumb from? It was a third at a time you could cut, which would be this. But the third.
Well, and not cut under three inches.
Yeah.
Right. It's hard to get your mower up to 4 inches on some of them. They just don't even.
I think that's the highest mine goes.
Right. Which this is let it grow to 6, cut it to 4. But yeah, you have to be. I do like tall cut. Like, I think even Jarek always, extension agent Kevin Jarek, would do outside the extension off, they'd mow different heights to show which was better for your grass, and cutting high is better for your grass as well. So I like that part of this, that you're cutting a little higher, but I think some of these might just let it and then cut it too short and just scalp it, and you had really bad grass. Yeah, I like that it is a... So if you're out there and you just don't feel like mowing that week, you know...
Just slow-mo summer.
Yeah, now you're just slow-mo. You just like bees at that point. You're not lazy or anything. It's fine.
It all depends on your neighbors. Have you, like, have in you, my neighborhood, it's not
Zero competition.
Well, two of my neighbors already mowed their lawns. Yeah. And like,
oh, yeah, one of my neighbors.
Yeah. So it's definitely.
Even got standing water in mine. Yeah, I can't go out there.
Even my 93-year-old grandmother made a comment about mowing a lawn. I'm like, it's not even May yet. Like, let's calm down. It'll be all right.
Especially the way this year is. It's not grown, like it's not super tall or anything like that.
Well, it's funny, and maybe this is why some people are certain about it. Like in mine, there's areas, I think due to moisture and everything else, that are taller. And that was the thing at home, too. My parents' lawn, there was always this drain field that had to be cut probably like twice as often as the rest of the lawn because it would grow faster. But either way, it's not getting out of hand yet. Next week, maybe when the heat, if we finally do get the heat that they're talking about, then maybe things will really start pushing. But
what I don't understand about like this slow-mo summer or the no-mo May idea, if you don't have flowers to pollinate in your lawn, does it matter? Like,
but I've seen enough bees like floating around.
Yeah, they do.
Like the little like white clover.
But that's I'm just saying, if you have pure grass, does that work or not? I don't know. So it just seems like I don't know how many bees are really in lawns. Obviously, this study showed that.
Well, it's not just bees, though.
Pollinators. It's
pollinators. Yes. You got to get off the bees.
I know. I'm just saying, if there's nothing there to pollinate, does it matter?
Well, obviously, your landscaping needs work then. You need.
No, those are fine, but I'm not mowing that either.
So. No, but they aren't just sitting in your landscape either.
Right.
So what I thought was interesting, and take it for what it's worth, given the source, but. Sierra Club recommends mowing once every 2 weeks and mowing a third of your lawn at a time. So I don't know if that's supposed to like help them
move around. Yeah.
It reminds me of the CSP enhancement where you're supposed to mow your hay field from the middle out
or
to get wildlife to run away from your efforts. But
you guys are going to love me because I do. Do you take a tape measure and measure the height of your?
No, we just do it whenever we can.
I especially if it gets tall, I'll take a tape measure, I'll measure the height, and then I'll set a third accordingly. I'll change my cutting height so I don't cut too low. But yes, I found is UW Extension does say cutting height of 2.5 to 3.5 inches promotes healthy grass growth. Mowing at the highest setting, 3.5 to 4 inches is generally recommended for the healthiest and most suitable approach. So if you're looking for health, like, what is neat about this is it also promotes fairly healthy grass. That is neat. I mean, nobody likes a 4-inch lawn. It seems like it's just too tall, but it's good for the grass.
To be honest, I think mine might be set at 4.
Good for you, man. See, you just like pollinators and like healthy grass.
Well, sure. Mine's at.
We'll
3.
Say that's why.
Mine's at 3, so I'm a loser.
Yeah. I'll have to look. I don't remember exactly, but I know I did set it higher for.
No, mine's usually like. 3, 3.5.
Yeah. All right. That's Corny this week. Is a gentleman we talked to a couple months back. Planted some beans, a guy named Ryan Nell, and unfortunately, just recently posted on Facebook that his January 31st soybeans did not make it through. So he was telling us at that time that he hadn't had a total failure in the, 6, 7 years he's been doing it. Well, this year's looking pretty rough for his early beans. Didn't stay frozen long enough, he said, in April, and was just too cold and damp, so a lot of rotting, and had good growth through mid-March, but proud of the little guys for trying. And so, his experiment did not work out this year, but other than that, he's had pretty decent luck from what he had told us.
Remember, a lot of his beans were planted in March too,
right.
This was kind of a new trial for him to really push it. And I could see, these beans experiences. I mean,
he did have December beans once.
Right,
before,
true.
Too, though.
You're right. You're right. And like in January.
He hasn't planted in February, from what I remember.
January was obviously good enough to plant these. And then it got super cold in February. Then it snowed in March.
Right.
So. You do give him credit for even making it that long. And then basically, it's interesting to me of like in alfalfa, a lot of times we say winter kill comes in April, like early April or late March. And these two, it seemed like, they were fine until early April. So, it's I appreciate him telling his story to some people when they have failures. They
right.
They don't want to, you know, like it, yeah. Right, you don't want to say the bad parts, but give him credit for kind of sharing everything, what he's learning.
And that's why he's not planting all his beans.
Correct. Like he said, yes, listen back to that episode of his strategy.
All right. Now to wrap things up with our Field Good Friday. So we've wrapped up another week of major planting progress through April. The USDA's latest crop progress report puts the country at 24% of corn and 18% of soybeans in the ground. Farmers are sharing that timely rains and great conditions for the start of the season. Obviously, that's not around here. We've haven't had
untimely rains.
The most timely rains, but we've had lots of rain in the last week or two here. So at this point in April, so this was as of April 28th, so earlier this week, majority of farmers have buckled in for spring planting, and another week of favorable conditions have put it in the tractor rear view mirror. And so North Carolina is at 18% gain in the last week or so here. So they're at 60% planted. Minnesota is at 26%. Wisconsin, 4%. Illinois, 16%. Iowa, 34%. Missouri, 47%. Let's see. Kansas at 39%. 74% in Texas. And then soybeans. We have more soybeans than corn planted in Wisconsin right now. We're at 6% there. 13%. In Minnesota, 25% in both Iowa and Missouri, 22% in Illinois, 45% in Arkansas, Mississippi's at 54%, and 70% in Louisiana. So we are gaining traction in both ways, but overall, we've seen around here anyway that soil temps are good, so once we get clear of the moisture issue, we should be able to get rolling a little bit harder yet. I know, Bill, you've got some beans in the ground, right?
Yeah, about actually 200 or so in the ground.
200 acres?
Yeah. Yep. Lighter ground, O'Connell County. They are germinated. The earliest ones were around the 16th, 17th, and I would venture a guess by early next week those will be poking through.
Okay. Yeah, I've got one farm that planted on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. Just one field so far. Todd, you got any beans in the ground or any corn?
Some further south, but it is wild that we're that far behind. You know, like Minnesota is quite a bit ahead of us in corn, so that is crazy. They've obviously had some sort of breaks that we just didn't quite get.
Yeah, Indiana slightly ahead of us. Michigan's about the same boat as we are. Ohio. And, well, Pennsylvania is behind us at least.
Right. That's what I was feeling good about, actually.
Yeah. So, but yeah, hopefully our listeners will be able to be out in the field soon if they haven't gotten out there already. So that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about early plant soybeans and thoughts to consider with herbicide program, and also encourage you to note your planting dates when you're out there planting those fields. Our spotlight, we talked about the ability to order peak sticks now if you're looking to manage your alfalfa crop by using that metric. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of the peak stick. Cool beans this week, no-mo May, what is now slow-mo summer in Appleton. Our That's Corny was Beaver Dam farmer Ryan Nell. His early January 31st beans did not make it this year. And Field Good Friday was another week of planting progress. So even if we can't plant here, at least somebody is out in the field. So thanks for listening. As always, happy farming.